This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson, you know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Hey, I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the St. Jude kids. St. Jude's doing incredible work fighting childhood cancer. And because of donations like the ones that you give, families never receive a bill ever from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, food, none of that. Help St. Jude stop childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope. Get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. It's going to look great on you. So join all the doctors, researchers, and me in this fight. All right, text the word Bobby. It's only 6 numbers to 785-833. Again, text the word Bobby to just these 6 numbers, 785-833. I almost thought we were going to do this next episode in 2 parts because it was so good. Carrie Edwards is her name. We're about to have her on. She's president of KP Entertainment, but she manages Luke, Brian, and Cole Swindell, and you're going to hear her story, and I'm just going to leave it at that. But the good news is that the air conditioning works in this room. The bad news is my entire house is like a freaking sauna.
Oh, really?
The air went out. My air goes out about once every 3 or 4 months, and they come and they fix it, and they go, we got it fixed, and then it dies again. And they're like, well, we can do the part, and the part will cost you $90, or we can put in a whole system, and that'll cost you $4,000. I don't want a whole system. So I do the next part, but I've done it like 5 times. For some reason, the thing keeps breaking. So thank goodness that this room stayed cool because I was really looking forward to the next one. And I know Carrie a bit now, and we get to know each other through first just her bringing Luke and Cole by the radio show, but then as even my career started to change and I started to have some bigger roles, and especially on American Idol, where we were together every week. So for me, it was exciting to have her in. And so that's coming up in just a second. I want to encourage you to check out, as I often say, some of our podcasts on the Nashville Podcast Network, including Caroline Hobby's podcast, Get Real, where speaking of Luke Bryan, she does a fantastic podcast with Caroline Bryan, Luke's wife. Scroll back and find that one. It was really the one that put me on, I knew Caroline, to put me on a Caroline's podcast. But that was the one where I was like, oh, she's really got some gold here with her idea of this show. So check out Get Real with Caroline Hobby, and you can see that podcast with Caroline Bryan, Luke's wife, just because Luke's top of mind right now. But also, there's one with Frankie Ballard's.
Yeah, Christy Ballard.
His wife. And I think that's the new one that's up. Lainey, who is Walker Hayes' wife, Jason Aldean's wife, Brittany. I think there's a lot of really great ones on the Get Real podcast. Amy's show, too. I don't want to go too long in this part because I think with Carrie and myself, we did over 1 hour. Some great Luke stories. And I understand with podcasts, you pause and, you know, you may go eat or poop or whatever and come back to it. But if you do pause it, for some reason you go to bed, you're on a flight, come back to it because, man, there's some real gold in here with a lot of the artist stories that she tells. And, even you know, she's from a small town in West Virginia. I'll let her tell you about that. Check out Get Real. Check out the Four Things podcast with Amy Brown, who, that's right, Amy has the last name. It's Brown. And it's a lifestyle podcast for women, but health, fitness, faith. It really is fantastic. The guys do a sports podcast called The Sore Losers. And I think they do that like 4 days a week or so. Just, I would say, check it out. And like I say every time, Mike, have we signed our next show yet?
Not yet.
Oh, not yet. All right. That we went from yes, we think, to not yet. We're working on with another show. Maybe we get it, maybe we don't. Check out The Raging Idiots. We'll be on tour. It's Eddie and myself. We have a musical and comedy show. It is unlike any Raging Idiots show we've done before. We are finally achieving my dream of doing a comedy music show. Instead of just the band, it's Eddie and I do some stand-up, but we do like a musical at one part, like a Broadway musical. We do get our guitars out and play some of our songs from our record live in Boston that you can check out and stream online. But check out the new Raging Idiot show as it is morphed into something I'm slowly getting pretty proud of. I really like where it's going. It's going to be fun. So RagingIdiots.com, a lot of the shows have sold out, but there are still some tickets for places like Chicago, Denver, Amarillo, Louisville, Vegas, San Antonio. Come see us. It will be a fantastic time. Mike, do you anything else I want to mention before we get going with the show here?
Also check out Velvet's Edge with Kelly Henderson.
Absolutely. Great call. Forgot about that. And I usually lead with her. And I'll say it's Mike D's birthday today, and here he is.
Yeah.
On his birthday. It's a work day on his birthday. I have to give you your gift. It's downstairs.
We did one last year on my birthday too. Brett Eldridge.
That was a year ago.
That was a year ago.
Boy, what a fantastic episode! Boy, we're nailing them on your birthday.
Yeah,
we are getting some great ones on Mike D's birthday.
It's great.
Happy birthday to you. That was go back and find the Brett Eldridge. That Brett Eldridge one actually is what started Brett and I's kind of friendship. Other than just seeing him in the studio, like Brett and I are, I wouldn't say like super friend, but we text and try to hang out now, you know? And that started with that podcast because we really hit it off on that podcast. Happy birthday to you. I guess you did most of your birthday celebrating last weekend.
Yeah, over the weekend.
And how'd that go?
It was good. Got to hang out with my family and my girlfriend.
It's 58.
Yep.
You look great.
Thank you.
Nice, 28. Happy birthday to you. So wait, what's anything going on tonight, or are you just going to chill and go to bed?
Chill and go to bed. And that's the plan.
Are you sad about that?
No, I think I got everything over the weekend, so I'm good.
Well, I have your gift downstairs, and you will like it.
All right.
And I had something else in mind, and I was like, you know what? That's not the thing. I saw something when I was out with Bear Grylls, and because I just returned from that show last night, actually. You can be watching for that in the winter. I do Running Wild with Bear Grylls. And Bear Grylls had something, and I was like, oh, Mike D needs this.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a bazooka.
All right, bazooka.
Yeah, it's a literal bazooka. But I saw it and thought about you, and I was like, all right, as soon as I get back, it's his birthday. And, happy birthday to you, man. You do a great job on this podcast. And, we started this freaking thing together.
Yeah.
Look at us.
In a spare bedroom.
And now, in a spare bedroom. And now, millions and millions and millions of downloads later and streams later, here we are. We got our equipment upgraded. We even had a little adjusting from our last episode. And so, happy birthday to you, man. That's cool. Look at you.
Thanks, man.
Like a little, I'm watching a little caterpillar turn into a wool butterfly. I put the show, did a post on Instagram. I was like, happy birthday to Mike D. And I put a goat in the Mexican flag.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Underneath it, yeah. And then I just forgot. And I came and started doing this show. And I wonder,
let's see,
if anyone, because you never know. If you don't like watch what people say, what are the comments like? Hey, Bobby, don't be a douche. Or like,
no,
I don't see,
no comments.
Good. Oh, good. Well, there you have it. Okay, away we go. This is episode 185.
Yep,
and it's a good one. And I hope you like it. And let me say this: if you do like it, please share with your friends on your Insta stories. Share with your friends. Tell them. That's how we continue to grow. That's how come we get the cool guests, because this thing keeps growing. And it started, we'd get like 500 people listening. Literally, we have millions of people that listen to this thing now. We can't believe it either. So we're really proud of it. I think it's the second most listened to show after our show, our radio show. It's the radio show and then this, and then like other radio shows and other shows. So, I mean, we're so proud of it. And if you don't mind sharing that, when we get to do stuff like talk to managers for an hour about their artists. So we're very proud of it. And here you go with the next episode of the Bobbycast. Here you go. All right, episode 185 of the Bobbycast, which I have to say, Carrie, that two things. I was really looking forward to this one because it's rare that you actually get that I get to bring someone that I really do know. And two, I get to wear shorts because people I don't know, I have to like dress up a little bit. Yeah. And it has to be professional.
All casual around here.
I'm in slippers and shorts and a like a sweatshirt because...
I think we should talk about the slippers, though.
But no, these are... When I won Dancing with the Stars, Good Morning America made these for me and gave them to me.
Well, they should. They're amazing.
Yeah.
I wish everybody could see them right now.
I thought you were making fun of them.
Not at all. I said they're amazing.
Oh, well. I'm so used to getting made fun of that that's automatically where my mind goes.
I get it.
So here's the roadmap of what we're going to do. Have you ever done a long-form interview before?
No, not Not really.
Like, this because it's going to be like an hour.
Okay.
Have you ever done anything like an hour-long interview about you?
Probably not. I've done speaking engagements.
Right.
That were based on kind of the story or different platforms in the industry, but probably not an hour long.
So here's the roadmap. And we may not do an hour. We may do over. It just depends. We're going to talk about Luke and how that started and where it is now. We're going to talk about Cole.
Okay.
We're going to talk about a bit about John and any of the other, John Langston, sorry, any other projects you have going. And then I want to talk about what a manager is.
Okay.
Because when I mention, because on this podcast, I really get in the weeds a bit and even talk about my management and what happens. So I do want to talk about what a manager does.
Okay.
And then we'll share personal anecdotes that we have about each other. And then we just wrap it up. And if that takes 20 minutes or 2 hours, that's going to be what we're going to do. So we're not going to go anywhere super crazy.
Okay.
Although I will say that when it comes to Nashville or just the entertainment business, period, and you're not going to want to say much about this because it's kind of me talking about how good you are, is that you're one of the most powerful people in country music, and I hope this isn't offensive, but nobody really knows who you are. Is that fair?
That's fair, and that's okay.
Okay, but you are, like, you do make a lot of things happen from way behind the scenes. Was that always the plan for you? Is that what you wanted to do?
No, I actually came into this to do A&R.
So to find music.
The creative side of it, yes.
So where'd you go to school?
Lipscomb University.
So here.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to Lipscomb and you think, all right, you like, I assume you like music. That's what you...
I did like music. I will confess, though, I went to Lipscomb and did not really plan on going into music. But I actually thought I was going into TV.
Like to do what? Like a reporter?
To be Katie Couric.
So that was the dream. Like, where'd you grow up?
West Virginia.
Okay, so...
The teeny tiny town outside of Charleston.
Of how many people?
There was not even a stop sign.
Stoplight. I didn't have a stoplight in my town. I had 700 people was my town. And so you can
maybe a little more than that, but not a lot more.
Were you good in school?
Yeah.
Were you super good in school?
I mean, I was in the top 5 of my class.
Yeah? Of how many kids?
Just 85.
No, that's awesome. I was not in the top 5 of my class. We had 40 kids.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I would say I always tell my kids that I'm street smart, not book smart.
Why Nashville?
Nashville, honestly, I came to Nashville, honestly, my parents kind of pushed me to come. They didn't push me to come to Nashville. They pushed me to go out of state. I mean, I was going to be like every other person that I knew and grew up around and go somewhere. Probably, I wanted to go to Marshall, which was about an hour from where I lived. And they said, that's fine, but if you want us to help you pay for it and help you along the way, you have to go out of state.
And you chose Nashville?
I chose Nashville.
And
I knew no one. I'll tell you, I mean, my sister lived here, but I didn't know anyone at the school. She was older than me, and she and my brother lived in Tennessee, but they weren't near me at the moment.
So you go to Lipscomb thinking you're going to be a TV reporter. When did that switch over and you decide you want to get into music?
I met a girl in Charleston, West Virginia at a festival, and I had gone back home for the weekend. A friend of mine ran this very large festival for our town in Charleston, and I had just gone back as a fan and was watching the show, and I was backstage with him, and a lady walked up and to introduce herself to him and this radio guy, and he got pulled away. I think I remember who was on this festival. It was Pam Tillis, Steve Warner, Leroy Parnell, and Billy Ray Cyrus. And Billy Ray needed my friend to do something. And so he got pulled away. So I'm standing there with this stranger. I'm probably 19, 20 years old. And I go, so I live in Nashville. I didn't know what else to talk to her about. And she was very nice and friendly. And was like, oh, that's great. You know, give me your story. And, you know, we just start talking. And before... the end, I mean, probably 30 minutes later, we're still talking, and we end up having a mutual friend, a person that I had gone to college with that I knew he did music. I knew nothing else about what he did, that he had kind of left school to go chase his music dream. And she goes, well, what's his name? And I said his name, and she just stopped in her tracks, and she goes, he works with me at Arista Records. And I'm like, really? Like, I really had no idea what he did. And so that made her drawn to keep talking to me. And she's like, if you ever want to do an internship, call me. I didn't even really know what that meant. But I was like, okay. And I get back to Nashville and I call her and I don't hear a word from her. Probably her name's Denise Nichols. She's still in the business. She ended up going and getting her, she's a lawyer, entertainment lawyer now. But at the time she worked at Arista Records in radio promotion. And the mutual friend also worked in radio promotions at the time. And 2 weeks go by and I walk in my apartment one day from classes and the phone's ringing. Because, you know, we didn't really all have cell phones then. So the phone's ringing, and it's her, and she's like, I'm sorry, I've been traveling. You know, if you still want to do this, come down here and meet with us. And when I did that, Arista was pretty new, and it was a standalone entity. It wasn't merged. Right now it's in with RCA, Sony, you know, the whole, there's a very large corporation. But at the time, it was standalone. I mean, I want to say they had like 12 employees at the time. And so I interned there and didn't even really know what I was getting into. But the minute I stepped in there and they started giving me jobs, I mean, I'm talking like I did Mellors, and every song had a gadget that went with it at that time. And if you're putting out a new song, you mailed something to radio that fit the song. I mean, I would do things like that, but I was so obsessed with it that if I was not in class, I was driving down there, like beyond the hours I was supposed to do it. I mean, I loved it.
So you found your passion? You mm-hmm. felt like that was
yes.
it? Explain what A&R is.
A&R is artists and repertoire. And they are responsible for signing talent to the record
label. Would you go out and find our acts?
Not then. I mean, I was too young and green. I mean, I would go and watch and listen with the rest of our staff. And we were all pretty tight because it was small. So they, you know, they let me have an opinion, but I wasn't really like, I was an assistant. Oh, I mean, at that point, I was still an intern. I mean, I think they hired me. I kept asking to intern. I probably interned a year and a half. I kept re-signing up.
Sounds like Mike D. Yeah. Yeah. You'd be like, can I keep interning? I was yeah. like, man, why don't you just let me pay you finally? Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to do it, right?
It works.
Yeah. So I did that, and they ended up offering me a job in A&R. My internship was in radio promo, so I started in that and then shifted into A&R. That was the only position that was open. So I took it, didn't really know what I was about to get into, and then was just hooked. I mean, just all about songwriters and publishing. And I mean, I would literally stay at the office till 10 o'clock at night.
Doing what, though? At working new in A&R, like what do you do?
I mean, I would organize all the stuff that the other two guys that worked with me did, their appointments, their song, I eventually made it to where I earned my way to start taking my own meetings and trying to find songs for our artists to cut.
Did you find any songs?
That took a while.
Any songs?
Oh, you're going to make me have to think back.
One. Give me one. You have all the time in the world.
I know. Let me think. There was... I have some funds. I mean, the ones that are coming to mind are songs that we found, and then they would get stolen away. Like
one artist would put them on hold, but somebody else would take it?
Yeah, like Time Marches On was one.
So do you remember who you held it for before Tracy Lawrence took it?
Well, a guy named Steve Williams worked with me at Arista, and he officially put it on hold for Brooks and Dunn.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then... Was Brooks and Dunn so new that Tracy Lawrence was such a bigger act that he got to go, hey, I'd rather have that song?
No, I honestly think it was an internal swap-a-roo. They had the same producer, and I think it kind of got shifted.
Like a baseball trade? Like, I'll trade you
kinda.
One Time Marches
yes.
On for one. Ah.
It was like a big story back then. Because, I mean, we were very passionate about the song, and I'm not sure at the time if Brooks and Dunn had heard it when Tracy heard it first. So it was a big, Tim Dubois, who ran Arista uh-huh. Records at the time, you know, he is a very even-keeled, gentle soul. But if you mess with a song, he will get fired up.
So there was a bit of controversy back then in Nashville because Brooks and Dunn had Time Marches On hold.
Yeah.
And
now the producer ended up doing the right thing, and he let them have a shot on it, and they end up letting Tracy have it. So I think in the end, it all ended up being fair. It just was, it started off not being fair, so.
What a good story. No idea.
Uh-huh.
So you do A&R for a bit, and when do you used to go, I think I may want to manage an artist, though, because that's a whole different, even though it's under the same umbrella, it's like a whole different part of the world of music.
I really never said that to myself. I didn't. From A&R, I went into publishing and did that I don't know,
which is like the songwriters and how songwriters get paid.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. And when you're in publishing, your job is, you're usually called a creative director, and your job is to book co-writes. So you're trying to match people that you think will go well together with either lyrics or melodies or whatever on that front. And then once the songs get turned in, it's your job to go out to then the A&R people, which is where I used to, you know, be employed on that side of things, and try to get the artist to cut the song. So I was doing that after A&R. So I'd always been on the song side of things, but that's my second publishing job, is where I met Luke Bryan.
And so how do you meet Luke?
He had just gotten, this company hired me to work for them, and he had just been signed as a writer maybe the month before that. So he was brand new to town. He came to town. He got super lucky, and he got a writing deal like within a month of moving to town, which doesn't happen that often.
So he was on a publishing deal.
Correct.
And that's how he was paying the bills.
Mm-hmm. And I got hired to help him do his catalog and co-writes and pitch his songs. And I knew he did like an artist thing in Georgia, but I truthfully didn't really ask a lot of questions about it then. I was focusing on his writing and getting, you know, trying to get him a song cut.
Did you think he was that good? Like when you first saw him, like next level good?
Writer or artist?
Just the it of it.
The it.
Did you catch the it immediately?
Yes, yeah. Luke's always had the it.
Yeah.
You know, he has. I mean, I didn't know the extent of him wanting to do the artist thing. So it was probably a year or more into, you know, working his songs as a songwriter side of things that I just honestly took a couple people. It was a random group, a couple songwriters and another publisher. Hey, do you want to drive with me to South Georgia? They're like, okay. And I went to watch his show in this tiny little college bar and literally stood there going, I really do remember the thoughts I had. I went there just to support him and just to see what he was about. And I remember standing there almost like, you know, mouth open moment going, this guy, like, every guy in here and every girl in here is singing the songs. It wasn't swayed one way. I mean, they knew song. He did a lot of covers, of course, but even when he was doing songs that he had written, they knew them, like all of them. And I felt like it was a Kenny Chesney moment, like how I felt when I stood in a crowd watching Kenny do a show. That's what I felt when I saw him perform.
Was it weird that you'd worked with him as a writer and you didn't see that until you actually went and saw that? Where it's like, oh my God, this guy that I know's got a whole different type of persona. Was it that kind of, maybe not even persona, but as a performer, he was just like a different kind of person? Or just the elevated version of himself?
I think it was just elevated. I mean, he is a big personality. Yeah. He walks in a room and you know he's in the room, and in a good way, you know, in a good way. But when I saw him up there doing his element and what he did, it just kind of almost put it in a different perspective for me. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do or what I thought I should do, but I couldn't stop thinking about it. You know, we did the show that night and, you know, hung out, drove back like 8 hours the next day, but I couldn't stop thinking about it. I'm like, this guy really deserves like a shot. You know, how do I help him do this? And he was, the company isn't around anymore, but it was called Murrah Music. It was a smaller independent publishing company that I worked for and he was writing for. And I went to the guy who owned it, Roger Murrah, and just said, you know, can I have your blessing to figure out what to do with him? And he was
like, did he want to work with you in that way? Did you and Luke talk before?
No, not really. I mean, no, because I think I was just more like, I think he was still green, but you still saw the potential. So I'm like, what can I do to help figure this out and help him with a path? And I just kind of started with his co-writes. And I mean, I just started calling people that I knew from Arista A&R days and had become good friends with through all of our experiences there. And, you know, I did the old, hey, will you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Call. And, you know, some did, some didn't. And just really worked on growing like his level of people he was co-writing with. And, you know, he still had a great batch of people he was, you know, that he had already developed himself and had, you know, great songs. But I just thought he needed to raise the bar on that side of things. And that's kind of how I started it in my mind, like going down how to help him grow. And then in the meantime, you know, he was still playing. He always kind of played a lot of club shows then.
In Nashville, or was he just playing the Southeast?
Maybe like, Southeast, yeah. And, you know, so he and Michael Carter, who's still in his band and his, you know, guitar player, band leader guy.
I saw him at the airport the other day. Yeah, we talked.
Yeah, so he's still with Luke. But they were in a band then, you know, since college, and they would go do that every weekend. You know, they'd load up whatever vehicle they were driving at the time. I remember, a small Toyota truck. I remember a Tahoe, just, you know, packing it in. And they went after it every weekend. And we just kept working on it that way. In the meantime, when I was pitching songs to my A&R friends at all the different labels, I would try to make a point, like if I was playing his song, to talk about him for a minute. You know, I it wasn't time to pitch him as an artist, but like I was trying to get them familiar with his name and, you know, that he was trying to do that and the style of songs that he wrote. So that was kind of my game plan, I guess, if I'm thinking back through on it.
Every 2 seconds, there's a victim of identity theft, which means a criminal could be spending your money, applying for loans in your name, and even damaging your credit. The good credit you've worked so hard to build. Unfortunately, you can miss certain threats to your identity by just checking bank statements and monitoring credit cards. The good thing is there's new LifeLock identity theft protection. LifeLock uses proprietary technology to detect and alert you to a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. And if you have an issue involving identity theft, one of LifeLock's identity restoration specialists will work to fix it. Of course, no one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but with LifeLock, you get identity theft protection and additional features to help protect your devices against cyber threats. Starting at the already discounted price of $9.99 a month, plus an extra 10% off your first year. LifeLock.com or 1-800-LifeLock. Enter the code BONES. That's the promo code BONES for 10% off. To get a job, you need a callback, a chance to interview and share why you are right for the position. Express Employment Professionals can help. Each week, Express has thousands of open positions. With Express, you don't have to go it alone in your job search. Express connects job seekers to the right company. They are committed to your success and never charge a fee to find you a job. Express knows jobs. Get to know Express. Find your local Express office at expresspros.com or on the Express Jobs app.
I wonder, just from your side, because there's a point where you have to go, all right, I'm going to consist of paycheck doing publishing, mm-hmm. where you're going to go to a lesser consistent paycheck managing an artist.
Correct.
Because it's a risk, because you're only getting, I mean, I talk about mine. They get 15% of everything I get. That being said, I got to get it.
Right.
Like, I got to be able to make the money. Because
right.
if I don't make money or no one wants to hire me, they don't get paid. So there's a real... there's a risk to you going, here's my paycheck, or I got my water bill covered, to I'm going to go and put my faith in this artist. Like, what point did you go, all right, I'm in, let's go?
He had brought it up a couple of times. Like, well, fast forward, he was writing better songs. He had written with a guy named Jeff Stevens, who's a songwriter here in Nashville who's had tons of hits. I mean, George Strait, Carrying Your Love With Me, Carried Away. I mean, Alabama Cuts, just been, you know, a successful writer here in town. I had asked Jeff to write with him, and it took a minute to set it up, if I remember right, because I feel like Jeff was between publishing deals or something, so it took a minute, and they finally ended up writing, and they just hit it off. And I think maybe after, like, the third song they wrote, a guy named Larry Willoughby, who was head of A&R at Capitol Records, heard a couple of the demos and just really loved, you know, kind of the sound. And he was like, you know, he called and he's like, I really like these and I like what Luke's doing right now. You know, who's he doing? Is this Jeff? And so he asked Jeff to kind of keep writing with them and see what they could come up with, kind of thing. And so that had happened. Jeff ended up being his producer and is still his producer, mm-hmm. has produced every record, you know, to date so far. So that's a fun story, you know, now looking back on that. But he had asked Jeff to be a part of that.
But you, like, yeah.
So going that. So all these steps that happened, he got a record deal with Capitol Records.
Are you his manager at this point?
No, I'm still his publisher.
How does he not have a manager if he's got a deal?
I was just pitching him. I was too in the meeting.
Did he have another manager? How does that, like, my mind right now is going, he's got a deal, but no, I know so many people that don't have deals that have like 19 managers.
I don't know. I always say that we were both just naive and green enough to just to keep trying. I don't know, for real.
He gets a deal, and you guys have been working so close together. There's obviously that trust. Mm-hmm. And so what's the conversation like between you two?
He had brought it up a few times, but I said, no, you know, that's not my deal. I don't know how that whole side of the world works. I mean, I know the gist of it, but I've never put a tour together. I've never, like, had to book shows. I mean, you know, that whole side of things. I worked at a label, so I kind of knew the big picture, but I was on the song side of it. I had never been in that trenches of that. So I would just, you know, kind of brush it off. And I'd set up meetings with either three or four other managers in town and took him to the meetings.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And when you did that, were you literally hoping one of the managers and Luke would hit it off and he would go have a manager?
100%.
Really?
Yes, yeah.
You wouldn't like take him to the worst ones?
No.
Like that only had done punk rock and be like, well, for sure this ain't going to work.
No.
Look at that. So you're rooting for Luke. You're like, all right, buddy, we're going to go get you a good manager. And those never worked.
I mean, he could have picked someone for sure, but then the more
he didn't
talk about it. I think I woke up one day and was like, oh my gosh, it hit me. And I said, I'm either going to have to walk away from this. And at that point, it was probably four years of like really putting a lot into what he was trying to do. I have to walk away or I have to figure it out.
That's like every girl I've ever dated with me. Poop. They're like, Bobby, get poop or get off the pot. Exactly. And usually I get off the pot.
And run.
And I run away. So yeah, you have that decision.
Yeah.
And you decide.
I mean, I was terrified. I had like two friends in town that I really confided in and was just like, what do you think? And two that I was probably driving crazy about it. And then I called Mike Dungan, who is the president of Capitol Records. And I had known him a long time. He was the number two person at Arista where I had worked previously. So we had a great relationship and a long-term relationship. But I was so kind of scared of doing something I didn't know. And more than that, I didn't want Luke to not be taken seriously. Like, it's a brand new artist with a manager that no one has ever heard of. That's not a great formula, you know? So, and I knew that. So I just had to get his blessing. I had to, or his opinion. Like, you know, I called him and I said, Luke's brought this up a couple times and now I feel like I can't walk away, but I will only do this if you are behind it because I don't want you not taking him seriously. And, you know, the interesting thing will be to go back and now ask Dungan what he was really thinking in that moment. You know, when I put him on the spot like that. But he sat there a minute, and he just goes, KP, I think you should do it. And, I mean, honestly, that took a lot of weight off. And, I mean, I was still scared. But just getting him to sign off and feeling like he supported the decision, like, made me then feel like I could move forward with it.
But it was
still a risk. Like, I have no, like, there's... You know how it works. I mean, I know not everyone out there does, but I mean, you like
that's
you
why
said,
we do the podcast.
Unless you're making money, revenue's coming in.
Yeah, unless the money's coming in, you're not paying your bills, or you got to go in the savings.
We laugh now because my husband's a dentist, and he bought our first like step and repeat backdrop thing
Luke.
Yeah.
So what a step and repeat is when you see like Luke take a picture with somebody, and behind Luke it says Luke Bryan or the name of the tour. It's literally just a frame with some kind of like felt or rubber, and it's just, and you get in front of it.
Right.
And that it's called a step and repeat because it's like next person up, step, take a picture. Mm-hmm. Hey, nice to meet you. It moves on. So your husband bought that, huh?
Yeah, because neither one of us had any money.
Well, then away you go though, right? Away you go. And you got a lot to learn.
A lot to learn.
It's all the part of an artist's career that I think even people don't realize are parts of an artist's career. Mm-hmm. The touring thing's interesting because you're routing a tour.
Yes.
And with the tour route, because I, you know, I've learned a lot of the stuff with touring too. You mm-hmm. you don't go California then Maine.
Correct.
Like you got to find venues that are mm-hmm. open and available that are near. Like
and someone else isn't near the market. I mean, it's a puzzle piece.
Yes.
So now, luckily there are other people that help you do that part.
But you got to find the right people though too.
Yes. Yes. And then we Luke's agent and is a guy named Jay Williams, and he's still his agent today from William Morris in Denver. But I think at that, I mean, I don't know exactly, but I think at that point, Luke may have been his second client. He had signed Dierks Bentley, and he flew down to a show in Luke's hometown because he had heard about this new kid that had gotten signed, and he flew down, and I don't know, we hit it off with him. It was like a vibe thing. It was just kind of a gut, like this guy feels like the guy for us, so, and he still is today, so he helped me a lot.
I wasn't here when Luke started. Mm-hmm. I was still in Texas. But was Luke, was there some heat on him when he was a new artist? Some people were like, oh, this new guy. Or was he like one of the new artists that it took a bit? And he kind of put some songs out and people were like, I don't know. Like, what was it like with Luke in the beginning?
Well, the first song we released was All My Friends Say. And it ended up being a top five.
So you're starting strong. My Friends Say. So yeah, you're like, bro, this is easy. We got to figure it out. Yeah. How do you feel when this song actually has some success? You're mm-hmm. a brand new manager. Mm-hmm. Are you like, I made the right call? Like, I feel good about it.
Which part? About being a manager?
Yes, all of it. You're like, holy crap, we got a top five song, got a new artist. Like, we're ready to go.
Yes, you do feel very proud and very excited, for sure. But, you know, one song doesn't mean you have a career.
But you only put out one, and you're one for one.
Yes.
Okay, so.
So we're excited.
You got a little new artist. Yes. This kid from Georgia kind of has a... kind of little twang about him, a distinct voice,
little flavor.
He's got, so okay, what's next?
Next was a heartbreak for us. We put out a song called "We Rode in Trucks," and it died.
Now, how quickly did it die?
I think it. I'm terrible on memories and all that, but I'm gonna say it got in the 30s, and our head of radio promotion at the time. Just felt like he wasn't gonna get it up the chart. And the reason it was heartbreaking was when Luke turned in his record, I think I've heard him say, so I'm not misspeaking, but that he believed, and I definitely believed, like it was his song. I mean, at that point, like to me, that was the song that was going to launch it. Yes.
It did not go so well.
Did not, and I was devastated.
Really?
He was beyond devastated.
Because that was his personal like baby song. Mm-hmm. Like that was.
I just feel like it was it is still like if you go and listen to it. I mean, it's funny you playing those because it's. I haven't listened to those in a long time as far as like his voice, and it just sounds so different now. But when you listen to the lyric of that song, it was very well done. And I was just super proud of that lyric and what the message was at that time. And, you know, it was called We Rode in Trucks, but it wasn't about trucks.
Right.
It was about life.
So that one doesn't do well. So then it's like, oh, great. Now we got to – now the pressure's on. Because one just kind of petered out. So what happens?
Well, you know, I'll say a lesson I learned in that – or that I ended up learning when I looked back on it. I think at that moment when that song didn't work, I remember sitting in the office I was renting at Starstruck Entertainment and telling myself, you know what? Like, I can't just rely on a liaison telling me why that didn't work. Like, I want to be able to ask people in radio why that didn't work. But I didn't know them because I was the brand new manager in town that no one knew. So it really became like a kind of a personal mission of mine to figure out how to meet those people and have a relationship with them. So the only way I knew to do that was to start going to a bunch of shows
get on
and
the get road,
on the
right?
road and do it. And
it's funny you say get on the road because even before, I know it's that you and I have a friendship now, mm-hmm. but even before we just worked professionally mm-hmm. around each other, you were always with Luke, mm-hmm. always with Luke. And I was like, man, she's always with Luke.
Mm-hmm. Well, at the time though, he was my only client for a very long time. So there was that.
Not when I knew you though. Because Cole came around about when I came around.
Yeah, actually, I worked with Kelly Bannon before that. So she was my second signing. Now, Cole was around, but he was around in a different role.
Oh, is that right?
He was Luke's merch guy. So, yeah.
Which is funny to talk about.
Right.
So, with Luke, how many songs did he have that didn't work?
That was it.
That was the one?
Yeah.
So, what was next?
Countryman.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the turning point for Luke where you go, all right, now we went from being an artist is on the radio and it's good to like...
Probably Do I, that he wrote with Charles and Dave from Lady A. Mm-hmm. That's probably the song that you really felt like was making a turn.
With this song, was there ever a question of who would get it? Because Charles and Dave, when artists write together, because I just had this conversation with TR, mm-hmm. because TR, Tom Schrett, and Matt from Old Dominion mm-hmm. wrote Some People Do together.
Right.
And they had the who gets it, because they both really liked it. Now, I wonder, when you talk about Do I, was that an issue with them?
I think, if I remember right, I want to say that Lady A already had their album out, and maybe it was the timing, and, those guys were fired up about being writers and stuff, too, so I think they were just excited, to have a cut, too.
Yeah.
I remember the number one party, and Charles, speaking on that, just how excited, for some reason I was watching it not too long ago. If somebody had a clip up like the last 2 or 3 months, but he's saying in that clip, oddly enough, this was almost more exciting for us than our first number one, which I don't know, but Need You Now, Please.
Right.
I mean, the biggest song in the universe at that time. So they were doing fine.
So that's kind of the turning point where, do the festival offers, are you now the big bold letters?
Yeah.
Does this do that?
But, Luke's been, in my opinion, I think he's always had a strong touring career. That was actually probably a very big benefit to him. He always was fortunate in that field of clubs and selling them out. And, not the first time, but, we really built that for a while. Club circuit and coming back and coming back and coming back, but then he did a lot of support. I mean, I think our first support slot, I can't remember if Trace Adkins took us out first the one I remember the most being the longest, real tour was Luke on the front, Bucky Covington in the middle, and Dirk's headlining.
Bucky Covington was playing the middle spot.
He was,
Over Luke.
Uh-huh.
Crazy. The only time I hear Bucky Covington now is on the airport when he's like, this is Bucky Covington.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming to B&A.
I don't know. Where is he?
I don't know. I haven't even seen him around.
Me either.
And he was an Idol guy.
Yeah.
Right?
I think
he was too. Yeah. From back in the day. So first time Luke wins Entertainer of the Year.
I mean, you'll make me cry now thinking about it, but it was beyond insane. Definitely that you feel like the validation from your peers and coworkers but I think it was just even more so just knowing all the hard work that he had put in and just, you don't top that moment, ever. And he and his family have had a lot of unfortunate tragedies, and watching them in that moment and being able to enjoy that moment was, pretty emotional. I was shocked, though. I mean, I really, the truth be told, that year when they were doing nominations, and a lot of times you discuss with your label kind of what your things are that your important emphasis for the voting period. I told them not to include him in Entertainer. I literally remember saying that. I'm like, no, we don't need to go there. Because, truthfully, I hated, as an industry person, it always bugged me when I thought people were on there and they weren't quite ready to be on there. And I kind of felt like that's where he was. He was blowing up, and I knew that, I felt that, but I still didn't feel like he should be there. And then after the first round, when he made the second round, but then as a manager, you're like, well, they put him in there. I'm not going to sit here and not try to support it.
Yeah, you're not going to go take him out.
Yes,
I demand.
No. So at that point, we went to work pretty hard.
Crazy, just because you were there from the beginning. There's just all of that early mm-hmm. sweat mm-hmm. is so much more rewarding.
It was mind blowing. I mean, you know, he's been fortunate enough. He's won two ACM Entertainer and two CMA. But, I mean, on all four times, you're just overwhelmed because that's, again, that's like the – that's the Trump. That's like the biggest honor that you can get, you know, in our industry.
What's the most frustrating thing about fans with Luke? Or not even fans, critics. Let's go critics because fans are all – fans love – I have this thing to where I talk to people. I'm like, you can't. People just want a voice. Mm-hmm. People are going to say things just to be heard, even if they don't mean it. Sometimes, like, where I would get irritated for Luke is when they would, like, hate on him for, like, the dancing.
Yeah. I mean, between the dancing and, you know, my favorite term, bro country.
You know, it's funny. I don't even think of Luke as a bro country artist.
Yeah, but that's, they started it with him, and it's so.
They did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much. I mean, and then. You know, became the thing. And I mean, I don't know that I heard him do an interview ever for like 3 or 4 years that didn't come up. It was exhausting.
That's funny that you, and you're probably right. I felt like it was an FGL thing more than it was a Luke thing.
No, it was Luke first.
Is that right? Yeah. And how did he feel about that? Did he just hate it?
Yeah. Yeah. He hated it. I mean, it's his artistry. It's his, you know, livelihood. It's his face. It's everything, you know. So, yeah, I mean, that's not what – I mean, you're out there working that hard and putting that emotion and energy into writing and singing and performing, and then that's the headline. Eh.
As his confidant, like his closest person professionally, and I've had to have these conversations with people that work close to me, mm-hmm. like what – how do you – because people have to walk me through things because I get a bit emotional or like I create something and it's not. How do you talk to him like, hey, man, keep your head down. Like, keep going. Don't let this get to you.
I mean, he's good about that anyway, truthfully. He has a good sense of business and he's, and I think, you know, I don't know, I'm guessing, but I think a lot of it may be, you know, the personal stuff that they've been through tragedy-wise as a family and, you know, it's a lot. That's a lot heavier than any of this sure. would ever be, you know. So I think just from those experiences, you know, he's good about trying not to get heady about that stuff, but there's no way it doesn't, you know, bother you at some point. So, yeah, he, you know, he would have moments that he would get really frustrated about or that he was over it, you know, over that being, you know, you go to a show and wherever, Minnesota, and that person would also, like, you know, or, you know, they would somehow reference it. But, you know, the review would be great. The show would be great. But he would still be in there somewhere referred to as the Burr Country artist of, you know. So he, I don't know. He, there was some time. I mean, you know, I don't know what year it was. But it was like the topic, you know. And he would do interviews. And, you know, a couple times I would have to maybe stop an interview or two.
And that's your job.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be the bad person sometimes.
Like, all right, we're done.
My thing is, and did you ever have to do that with me? Did you ever have to stop?
With that?
No.
Oh, in
that was never a thing to me. Yeah. But, like, no. Early on.
No, I don't think so. I don't remember.
I don't think so. I did get interviews because mm-hmm. people were just, they were a bit, I was the new guy, and they were a mm-hmm. bit like, what is this guy up to? Mm-hmm. But as the manager.
Well, you know our town. Now you know our town.
Now I know. Well, I just work both sides of it. So right. Now, you know, I'm doing the interviews, but I'm also being interviewed all the time. And so I also have my manager.
Right.
There are times where they have to step in and be the bad guy mm-hmm. or take somebody out of the room mm-hmm. and have an uncomfortable conversation that they don't want me to be around. Mm-hmm. And that's your job. You have to be the bouncer sometimes.
I do. And like, I feel like it's one thing to do that early on. It's harder to do it early on because you still feel like you're getting your foot in the door with everybody and you don't want to make anybody mad or come off the wrong way. But then there's a certain point where you're just like, all right, this is not the best situation for this client and they need to know.
How did you feel like being a female in the male business? Mm-hmm. Male, it sounds like you're a mailman. I don't mean male as in, but like a dude bit where there were a bunch of dudes. How was it for you? As you, because you are strong.
I would say early on it was very in country. I'll just stay in that lane. I mean, it was management was male driven. I would say. I mean, now I feel like it's pretty balanced. I mean, I think about, you know, I mean, Marion with Miranda, you know, Mary Hillier with Dirks, Anne with Carrie, Virginia with TR. I mean, there's a good group. I'm sure I'm leaving people out, but just off the top of my head, I mean, there's a good, strong group of,
yeah,
of females now. And honestly, it's been great because we're all very supportive of each other. And I mean, there's times that I remember probably maybe last fall texting Marion. I'm like, are you in town? She's like, yeah. I'm like, can you meet me? I just needed to vent and like sit with somebody who's, you know, on the same side. And she's amazing. But, you know, when I think back to her, when I was, you know, trying to decide if I was going to go do management, I barely knew her then. And she would always meet me for lunch and give advice. And, you know, but, you know, Clint Higham did as well. I mean, I knew Clint through other, you know, friends and channels in the business, but, you know, he would meet me and, you know, give me inside information of like how to go about something, you know. So I feel like I've always been supportive, but you still just have to work your way through it and in our town. And I think from the professional side and the artistry side in our town, my opinion, you know, we're all very, you know, we're competitive, but you're still very protective. Like, you know, I think I said this in an interview recently, but, you know, of course, you know, I want Luke and Cole and them to be competitive or as competitive as Blake and Jason. But at the end of the day, I don't want anybody else talking about Blake or Jason in a bad way. So
it's like brothers or best friends. Like, I may beat up, but don't like my show even.
Right.
Like, I may beat up on Lunchbox, but you don't talk about Lunchbox or I will kill you.
Exactly.
It's that kind of deal.
Yeah.
So one of the Luke questions, I want to move to Cole. Mm-hmm. So just about American Idol.
Mm-hmm.
How does that even happen?
Luke ended up hosting ACMs, you know, started with Blake, and then with Dirks for a couple of years. So I feel like that kind of maybe opened that, even the TV door a little bit in Luke's mind. I don't know that he ever set out to, you know, do that by any means, but he enjoyed it. And it was a lot of pressure, even that, the face of that award show. I think he did it 5 years. So I really feel like looking back from year one to five, he did grow a lot and he started getting it and like what he needed to do and what they needed from him. And, you know, that's a whole nother, as you well know, it's a whole nother level of not just going on stage and performing. But, you know, he had gotten several offers, you know, for different TV things, and we had passed on a lot, you know. They just didn't feel right, or at the end of the day, he just kept passing on them. And then I got a call about American Idol. I truthfully didn't think he was going to be interested, truly. But, you know, of course, I take it to him and give him the details on it. And he just went, huh. He sat there a minute. I remember being shocked, like, well, he's actually thinking about this, you know. And, you know, he asked a lot of questions. And, you know, at that point, I had a ton of questions. Like, we had never gone into any kind of adventure down that lane. And we just kind of kept talking through it. I'm trying to remember at that point, I don't know that anybody, I'm trying to think if Katie was locked in. So I think maybe she was getting close, but I don't know that she was like had signed on the dotted line to come on. So you were kind of waiting those things out too, to see if it made sense. But we just kept talking. We met with them a lot. I mean, it was a pretty long process the first time.
How's he like doing the show?
He loves it.
Yeah. I mean, I know the answer to that.
Yes.
But
you see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the two of you both love it. You both sit backstage and talk about different contestants. And
the people are so good. Like, I like the people, like Trish, mm-hmm, and Matt. Like, I just like working with the people at Idol.
I agree.
Because for me, it's all about what environment am I in that's going to allow me to be at my best. Because if I'm not doing something where people are giving me an opportunity to shine or supporting me, I don't even want to do it.
I think they do a great job of that. And, you know, and I don't know how you felt coming into it the first time, but it's like anything else. I mean, I remember walking into the first, you know, after we signed on and getting to the first audition, I mean, I felt like Mama Bear, because I was like, you know, you don't trust anybody when you walk in, because you've just learned along the way. And we didn't know, you know, we'd met him in different meetings, but you don't know him. So, you know, you go in going, oh.
Yeah. And also Katie and Lionel, too. I mean, there's a dynamic there where those three have to sit up there and
It's hard.
It's a lot of working parts, and how is it going to work together?
And I don't, you know, I think about that even when he was hosting, until, you know, how many award shows had I sat through the years. But then when the person you're representing is up there, and again, they're the face of it, you start thinking about it differently. But I mean, it's a lot of pressure. I mean, I think about the three of them up there, and I mean, you as well. I mean, you know, you guys are trying to give guidance and advice, especially during auditions, you know, how many kids roll through there.
Yeah.
And I mean, we tape what, 10 hours
they're,
a day?
The days are,
they're so long. And those three set up there and have to be on, and you know, you don't want your advice to sound the same, you know, nor should it. It's different people singing, but I mean, it's harder than you think, than I ever thought about it until he was doing it.
But yeah.
He does love it, and you know, you guys talk about it when you're not on camera.
We
and,
do. Yeah, we'll be like, yeah. I'll ask him, I'll be like, why did you not? Because our rule too, we don't really talk about it while it's exactly happening, because I don't want to, because I'm with them when they don't see them.
Right.
Like, judges don't hang out with them. I'm with them all the time.
I know.
And so I don't ever want to
have even more inside scoop.
But I'll go to them after they cut somebody and be like, oh, you suck. You screwed up. Like, one of the girls, Emma Klein. Uh-huh. I was like, why'd you cut her? Like, she's great. And he's like, he sees it different than I've seen it. Mm-hmm. There, you know, it's those three, and I'm taking her out on the road with me the whole, and her and Walker are both going out with me the whole year.
Walker told me that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah, that's what the whole store basically is, fresh leather,
yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
TECOVAS.com.
TECOVAS. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me, because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, to take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833.
This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for four lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with four lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
So let's go back, and you mentioned Luke's merch guy, mm-hmm. Cole. Mm-hmm. And so Cole
Swindell.
Well,
Cole has been in our life a long time. He went to Georgia Southern, and that's where Luke and Michael, his guitar player, had gone to school. So they were going at, you know, back and doing fraternity parties and stuff, and Cole was in school there. He is, you know, he's a few years behind them, and he would come to these fraternity parties, and he was just intrigued. He was in awe of, like, that they got up and sang. And then, I mean, Luke, and I don't think I was at the fraternity party phase of that, but Luke tells the story of, you know, him rolling in to do a show, and he had a new song that he had written. And just Cole's reaction, like, you actually wrote it? Like, you wrote it? And him, like, realizing, like, oh, my gosh, you know, this guy also wrote the song? Like, how does that work? And just his, he was just so, I mean, Cole just was like the sponge that couldn't get enough of it. And he eventually ended up doing, like, a little duo thing with another guy from, you know, that he went to school with. And they kind of started doing the little bar circuit thing, too. But he was always, I mean, there wasn't a show that we did in the Southeast that he didn't find his way to. You know, he would, I'd look out and be like, oh, there's the Cole, there's that Cole.
That Cole
guy,
kid's here.
Kid. I remember the day that Luke called me and said, now, let me paint the picture. I was a solo, like I had zero employees, zero, no help. I had two small children, and I literally would stay up every night. I would get them to bed and then go back to my email probably till 2 or 3 in the morning. We were booking flights. I mean, I was booking flights for radio tours and hotels. And I mean, it was nonstop. So I don't think I'd ever been paid yet, which was fine. So I would work with songwriters kind of on the side and pitch their songs and just to have some income coming in, you know, for myself. So that's kind of how I made that work then. But I remember the day that he called and said, hey, so Cole's, I just got the phone with Cole and he really wants to move to town. Do you have a job for him? And I go, Cole, like I remember stopping, I go, Cole, like trying to think about it. And he was like, you know, the kid from Georgia. And I went, no, I don't have a job for Cole. I was like, how are we going to pay Cole? And he was like, oh, I just want to help him. He wants to move to town. I'm like, I get it, but we can't pay him. Like, I don't have a job for him. And we hung up, and Luke was very disappointed. And I sat there, and like 10 minutes later, I was like, So I called Luke back, and I'm like, well, we do need somebody to sell your T-shirts. And he went, perfect. I'll call you back. And he hangs up and calls him. And literally, Cole drives to town that night.
Wow. He was that fired up.
He was that fired up. He was ready to get on the bus. He was ready to go.
So, Cole.
If we had a bus, we probably didn't have a bus then, actually thinking back.
Instead of driving himself to all the shows, now he's part of the team going to the shows.
Yes.
And he's selling merch. But, okay, so how does he end up telling Luke or you or whomever, hey, I'm also like writing songs?
We knew that he had the art, you know, the duo thing. So that wasn't a secret, you know. But he didn't, you know, Cole is going to ease his way in. You know, he doesn't walk in a room and demand everyone to know everything. He kind of, you know, I think he sat back and kind of watched it and learned. And he didn't do the artist thing for a while. You know, he was probably out with us selling T-shirts for probably 2 or 3 years before I ever really even saw him. I saw him.
That many years, huh?
Oh, yeah, he did it. I mean, yeah, for sure. I mean, he did it maybe. I mean, he was out there with us definitely 3 or 4 years selling. But I was going to say, like, it was a few years in before I saw him actively out there trying to write songs. So he and Michael Carter, Luke's guitar player, started getting in the back of the back lounge of the bus. And Michael wasn't really a writer at that time. He had like a small deal maybe right when he first moved to town, but I think they just kind of taught themselves how to, like, they would do it every day. The two of them would sit back there every day and write. And I didn't hear any of the songs. I didn't really ask about them. And I think maybe Cole shared one with me, and I was like, oh, that's pretty good. And then he eventually would occasionally share one. And I remember hearing, like, a demo session, and there was a song in there. I'm not going to remember the title right now, but I remember thinking that it was, like, the best thing that he had ever done, and I went and played it for Luke, and I was like, hey, I think they're getting the hang of it. And Luke's like, really? Let me hear it. You know, he got all excited. And I mean, one thing I will say about Luke, and Cole was the same, they both are truly champions for other people. Like, they do. Like, I watch both of them want other people to win and have opportunities, and they get, I mean, Luke gets fired up for new artists, and Cole does the same thing. They just love watching people in those steps along the way. But yeah, so he was our merch guy turned
guy that's riding the back of the bus.
Mm-hmm.
So for you, when do you go? Okay.
Well,
it's an investment for you.
He came. I could tell he was really starting to hate me out there, like selling the T-shirt part. He had the rider bug bad, and so we pulled him off the road, and I went to Luke and I said, you know what? I'm like, he's really doing well. I was like, I think I'm gonna try to help him find a publishing deal. And then I think at that point I had the idea to go talk to Luke's publisher and just see if they had any interest of doing something with us. Or, I mean, I didn't really know. I was just talking through it with a guy named Troy Tomlinson at Sony Tree. And that is where Luke was a writer. And, you know, I remember we went in there and met with him, and he's looking at us like, no, don't make us do this. And I'm like, Troy, just trust us. Just trust us, please. And he's like, do you know how many deals I've done like this and how they've gone, you know, with artists? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, but just trust us, you know. And I'm like, we want to sign Cole and Michael Carter, and they're gonna be amazing. And, you know, he really did not want to, but the relationship was important to him. And he was like, all right, we'll try it. And it has paid off well.
What was the first song that Cole wrote that was like had some substance to it that got some radio play or something?
I think his first cut was Scotty Cleary, Water Tower Town. I think that was the first one. And
yeah.
Then he and Michael had a Craig Campbell song. What was the name of it? It literally was one of the longest songs on the chart that year.
Can't Stop Loving You?
No.
Was it?
Dang it.
Craig Campbell or Craig? There are two Craigs. Craig mm-hmm. Campbell. What was the Craig? Because he got dropped right in the middle.
It's a great song. I'm just blanking on it right now. But
Cole's writing, but mm-hmm. is he going, I also want to be an artist to you?
I think he went and did a BMI. BMI does a retreat at Key West with songwriters, and he went and did that 1 year, and I think that's when he got the bug back. And he had a couple songs that had been hits for other artists, and he did that and the reaction, and he
this is it. Out of my head.
That's it. Sorry, I blanked.
Out of my head, yes.
The name of it,
yes,
right, Mike? Yes, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great little
song. Yeah. This song, whenever Craig Campbell got dropped, the label, I think, folded.
Mm-hmm.
And the song was so good that my company, iHeart, was like, we're going to make it on the verge because the song is so good. And Craig was, I remember this whole thing going down.
It was, I don't know if it ended up being the longest running song, but it was on the chart
almost 60
time.
Weeks.
Yes, a long time.
With Cole, mm-hmm. as an artist, did you see him and go, okay, this is the guy who's going to have a bunch of hits and get up and...
No, not really, to be honest. I didn't at the time because, you know, he's grown into the artistry side. You know, he was a little more quiet and
he's
shy.
Mild-mannered. Yeah, even
he's
now, he's
mild-mannered,
yeah.
He's mild. So, I mean, did I think, but I knew, like, the songs he was turning in and his writing, that part I knew was great. And he came in and played me a song. Well, he had the song called Let Me See Your Girl, and I loved it. And I had talked to Stormy and then John Marks about, like, you know, how does this program work that you guys do on XM at the time John was there. And they, at the time when I asked them that question, FGL was the only person who had done their program. So I was just kind of inquiring about it because I knew that you didn't necessarily have to be signed and they would support it. You know, it was a little different angle. And he had agreed to play the song. But in the meantime, Cole is texting me going, hey, I wrote this other song. I can't wait for you to hear it. I'm dying for the demo. Da, 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 da. And he just kept talking about it. And one day he calls and he goes, are you in your office? And I go, yeah. And he goes, can I swing by? And I said, sure. So he comes in and he's kind of nervous. And he said, well, I got that song back I was telling you about. And I said, okay, awesome. He goes, can you listen to it? I'm like, yeah. So he hands me, you know, his phone or whatever. I think it was a phone at that. And I plug it in and I'm just sitting there, head down, listening to the song. And He tells the story that like that I have no reaction and I'm not looking at him and he is panicking because he thinks I hate it. And I get why he would think that looking back. But what I was really thinking the whole time I was listening to the song was, oh my gosh, what am I going to do with this? I mean, I really was like, this is so fun and so different and so good. And the song ends, I turn it off and I turn around, I look at him. I'm like, do you really want to be an artist? Like you've been on the road, you've seen what they do, you see what it's about. You really want to do it? And he goes, I really do. And I went, okay, because this is the song. And I mean, like, and then we both literally start jumping up and down in my office.
And that
like,
song was?
Chilling it.
Yeah. I got my shades on top, back rolling with the music jack. New jam. On the wheel, one around you, baby. It's so crazy. That whole, how one of them rolls into the other.
It was insane. I mean, and at that time, the only artist I'd ever shopped a deal was Luke when I was working with Kelly Bannon. She was already signed to a label at that time. But, I started, people started calling me because they started seeing the streams and then what was happening, and he had no deal. And that doesn't.
Well, what a good position to be in.
That doesn't happen often, right. Obviously, in this town. Maybe a little more now with, more streaming services, I guess. But, it was overwhelming. I mean, I think at the end of the day, I think he had an offer from every label but one. And so then I was in a hole. I mean, I'm just begging people to give Luke a deal. And we had one offer.
Yeah.
One and a half. Somebody else was about to. And I'm like, no, they came to the table. We're just going to take this one. But with him, it was a different thing. And it was learning something new, really. I mean, which has been a fun thing for me personally, like learning. I feel like I don't stop learning.
And nor will you ever. And if you ever feel like you don't need to, then you're done. Anyway.
Doing a deal for American Idol, like doing a deal on that level, like just what you have to learn to like be in the game.
The game's a funny thing. And I wonder, because you've done so many things, and there are I get a lot of messages from new artists in town that listen to this podcast, because we get deep into the weeds about songwriting, and a lot of the artists come in and talk about second and third layer type things that you don't really talk about on the radio. So what would you say, like what's the key to an artist career, to starting one? It's the age old question. Like what advice do you give somebody coming to town?
Well, I mean, I think it's about one, the people you surround yourself with and that they really do believe in you and that you trust them, because it is, I mean, I talk to all my clients every day of my life, pretty much. I mean, you are in the trenches with them. So, I mean, make sure you surround yourself by people that, I mean, you're going to make mistakes and you're going to be mad at somebody, and somebody's going to take advantage of you more than likely somewhere along the way of life. I think Luke and Cole both have examples that they would go, but you just got to look at it like, for some reason that was part of my path and that's what it was, but move on and we'll do the things we can control. I think that's part of it to me. Stick true to who you are and what you're about and what you want to say. And it goes back to your critic thing. I mean, that was another advice or that I would try to, tell any of them when they feel like they're getting beat up about something. It's like, you know what? All you can do is you. And somebody's going to have an opinion and they're always going to say something, but be you and be true to you and don't get heady with it. There are all those phases. I think about, as an artist has their fifth and sixth album, you're always questioning, like, what do I do next? What do I need to do next? And that's good. You should always question that. But I think if you get too heady with it, you'll be in a mess. I think I did not even answer
the
question.
No, you did. You definitely did, in a way. So what is it, if someone's going, man, I think I'd like to be a manager.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they go, I love music.
I say run. I'm kidding.
Yeah, right. Like, to condense it, 60 seconds, what does a manager even do in your mind?
I mean, I guess I think of it like there is nothing that happens in that artist's career that the manager is not involved in or signing off on or approving. Nothing. Like, unless it's something a fan has done or put up, but, like, anything that you think of, a photo, a social post, you know, are they on a show? Are they not on a show? Or, you know, what's the song? I mean, you're involved in every single aspect of what is happening. So it's a lot. You have to be crazy organized, and then you're still not organized enough. And it doesn't turn off.
It never turns off. And you have, we talked about John Langston.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, new artist.
Yes.
So tell me about John Langston.
John Langston. He came into my path probably, I guess, maybe 3 years ago. And we had some friends in Georgia that had seen him in the bar circuit there and had mentioned him. And a guy that works for me, Dustin Eichton, he does a head of marketing for my management company. He really started paying attention to him, and he would bring him up to me and, you know, kind of hand me a song every once in a while. And, you know, I kind of watched it, but I just kind of watched it. Like, I didn't feel like he was ready then, but he was creating this underground something, you know. I mean, I you couldn't deny it. Like, I just kept watching it over, like, a two-year period. And he got hooked up with Rhett Akins, who helped him get a publishing deal, and I saw his writing get better and stronger, and just saw like more shows he was doing. And he was doing a show at Third and Lindsay here in Nashville, and I was out on the road with Cole, so I couldn't go to it, but several of my staff were going to go watch him and like support him. And I did not talk to one person in my company about this, but I was sitting on Brian O'Connell's bus, who's a promoter for Live Nation. I was sitting on his bus pre-Cole's performance, and I couldn't stop thinking about John was about to go do this show in Nashville that night, and I was kind of bummed I wasn't going to be able to see it. And I just FaceTimed him and was like, I was calling to encourage you and tell you you're going to do great, and I'm excited for you. And by the way, how would you like to work together? Like, I did not tell a soul. It just, I couldn't shake it sitting there. I'm like, it's time. Like, I've kind of watched him for 2 years, and it's time. So that's kind of where that started. And, you know, he flips out and was like, really? Yes, yes, yes. You know, so it was kind of official that night. And we just kind of kept building him the same. I mean, he was green. So we worked on, you know, he worked on his songwriting, and he, you know, like the other guys, I really do feel like I've been fortunate with them. Like, they do well on the road. And, you know, he sells out like every club he plays. And he has a great underground following. And he came and did Luke's farm tour. Year before, so 17. And at that point, we were, you know, starting to talk to labels about, you know, him getting a record deal, but nobody was really moving on it. And I was like, Luke, I was like, these numbers are crazy. I'm like, we put out a song of his called When It Comes to Loving You, and he's never been on the radio. He has no label deal, and my management team put together a plan to release the song. And I mean, he was number one all genres over the weekend that we put it out. And I'm like, you know, that doesn't happen. You don't go on iTunes and sell that many singles unless you've built something.
Right.
So he did that, and, you know, Luke was, like, blown away by that. And I had already been talking to a couple of labels about him, and Luke's like, I need to figure it out. I'm just going to figure out how to sign him. So Luke kind of went out prematurely and offered him a deal, and we had no label. So I'm standing there going, what are you doing? He's like, he's walked off the stage. He goes, Langston, come here. I'm getting you a record deal. And I was standing there going, you can't do that. You don't have a label. So I quickly went and figured out how to get him a label. So now we have 32 Bridge Entertainment that John Langston is signed under with EMI.
And how big's your staff now?
Not big enough.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that a good problem to have, though?
It is. I think there's like 7 of us.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You're still in Starstruck?
No, actually, I'm all grown up and bought a building, have my own office now.
Where's the building?
It's in Berry Hill.
You bought a building.
Mm-hmm. It was time, though.
Look at you.
It was time. It was time.
The only people who has built, like, you have a building.
Well, I don't.
Come on. No, no, no.
I'm not saying it like that.
I'm saying it like that. You know what annoys me for you sometimes?
What?
And I hope you know I love you too, right? Like, completely. So I want to, when people will say she's one of the best women, I'm like, you guys are out of your mind. She's like the best. Mm-hmm. Stop tagging it with a male or female thing.
Thank you.
Like when I see them, they're like, she's one of, you know, the best female man. I'm like, F you guys, man. She's one of the best managers.
I mean, that is still weird to hear. I mean, I don't know. It's weird to, I mean, you know, fortunately, you know, a couple of our industry magazines do those power player lists and all that. And you know, when you're on that, like, you're like, excuse me?
I
really don't think of it like that. I mean, I really do. I don't, this is going to sound cheesy, but I swear to you, I love every minute of this and I love what I do and I love, I mean,
for the, sound cheesy. Nothing sounds cheesy right now.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be like, but it truly is. Like, from when I got that internship and I did not leave Arista Records, like, I still feel that way. Like, every day. Like, if I wasn't in class, I was trying to figure out how to get down there and do work and learn something. And I really still feel that. I still get excited. Like, nothing is, I mean, there's exciting moments, like crazy milestones, you know, people play the Opry and you watch, you know, you watch the joy of your clients in these moments and you're sharing in that. And that, those are overwhelming, you know, it really is. But I don't know, I still get just as excited when someone comes and hands me a song. That, you know, like Cole did with Chillin' It. Like,
I have a song I want you to hear, by the way.
Okay. No,
I'm just kidding. I bet that's a thing too, because I deal with that as well, where people are just trying to get you music in the most random of ways.
But I love it. I still love it.
There are times. Okay, good. I'm glad you love it, because it's great. Whatever.
I love blah, blah, blah.
When someone like gets in your personal, like, there will be times where I'll valet my car and people will leave stuff in my car.
Well, I'm not as famous as you. Don't forget. It's true. Yes.
In a different way. Like, if you're far more valuable in that lane than I am.
But you have a totally different reach, too.
And you have a totally different strength. Okay, we're just going to agree to disagree on this one. Well, listen. Mike, how long are we down here?
Almost an hour 10.
We don't ever do them this long. I'm telling you. This has been... I was so late. I didn't even reach out to you personally because it's the whole dynamic for me...
And, you're so professional about
it. Well, here's why. Because... I don't go to people that I know and ask them to do anything professionally because, like, that's a different avenue. Like, I would call you and be like, hey, we're in L.A. We're at the hotel. You want to get something to eat?
Right.
I would text you. Or, like, the greatest advice. You gave me a piece of life advice that you don't even know.
What?
That changed my life. You said, you should go to Disneyland.
Oh, true. Yes, I do.
We were... After Idol won.
Yes, uh-huh.
And since we work for ABC, there's a hookup with Disneyland.
Yes.
And
I had just gone.
And we were together, and you were like, you got to go.
And then when I heard you had never been.
Yeah.
I wanted to take you right then.
And so...
But of course you couldn't because you had 10 other things to do.
Like a week and a half later, I called and...
When I gave you the name,
you did. I'm like, the whole hookup.
I introduced you. That's right.
Yeah.
Backstage on the press line.
And you're like, this is the guy.
Like, you got to know this guy.
And you were so adamant that it wasn't like I wasn't putting anyone out.
No.
Like, you're like, do it. You're like, you work for ABC. This is third. You, even away from the guys,
right.
You're like, do it.
Please.
Like, this is the one thing. You're like, I know you don't want to bother, but just do it. And I did. It was awesome. We had to go through no lines. It was the greatest thing ever.
You feel ridiculous, but. It's life changing to do it that way.
You feel ridiculous cutting in line to everyone, but you feel less ridiculous and you feel more relieved that you don't have to wait in line the whole time.
Definitely.
So
definitely. And then you know that you've worked hard to get that relationship in some way, right?
You know, I just have to understand the line. I'll be honest with you. When I was going on Space Mountain, I was like, you know what? Thank God for Carrie. Well, listen, I'm happy to see your success. And my point was, I wouldn't ask you to do. I don't know. I think I went to Mike. Who did you talk to get to Carrie? How did you get asked to do this?
Tom.
My manager.
Your manager.
Because I didn't want to. It's like even now, I would say 2 years ago, I would have been like, "Hey, Luke, come do the show." Mm-hmm. I won't do that now because I just feel like we're on a different level, and I wouldn't ask my friends to do stuff for work.
And you're also, you know. Like you said in the beginning, you have two roles in this town, in this life. So you also know what it's like to kind of not be put on the spot. Nobody means it like that.
Right.
But, you know, it's good to have the buffer.
Yeah. And that's why I didn't want to ask
and
you.
And just for the record, I don't think I've ever done someone's podcast. So that means I like you a lot.
Well, I appreciate
that.
And
then that. I'm comfortable enough to come here. I was like, oh, gosh. Okay, sure.
I was excited. I was surprised and excited. They said yes. And I didn't make. I went to Mike, who went to my manager, Tom Lord, who went to you. Yes. So when it came all the way back. Because what that does is it gives you an opportunity to say no without. Because if I were like, hey, Carrie, come over to the house and do the podcast. If you don't want to do it, there's an awkward step in there.
And it's not for everybody, you know, but.
It should be. This is a great podcast.
I mean, in general, people don't like to, like, you know. So I don't do it a lot, but it's been fun.
You did.
Thank you.
In over an hour. We did an hour. Did it feel like
we
that?
We didn't even talk about all my clients.
We didn't.
Okay.
We didn't. Who else do you want to mention? Hey, who are the young boys? The young kids?
Christian Clemente and Brody Clemente, CB30.
How am I getting old? Or are they like 9?
They are younger, but they are 18 and 15.
Okay, I'm getting older.
So they are. But when I first signed them, they were 12 and 15.
Oh, they were.
Yeah. So we've been grooming them along the way, but they are now signed to Buena Vista Records, which is one of the Disney labels. Mm-hmm. We're back to the Disney connection. They just put out a song. I think 2 weeks ago, called That Moment When. And we haven't really done like the official radio thing, but please go listen to it. It's fun.
Yeah.
They've grown a lot. So, and then Adam Craig, who you've had on the show before.
Yeah.
And he's on Broken Bow, and
I've played festivals with Adam before, mm-hmm. too. He came up and he's played with us before.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. So he has a new song called If You're Lucky. And I love it. Have you heard this? You need to go listen. It's really fun.
Here, well, I'm going to play it right now,
okay,
actually.
Perfect.
Not the whole thing, because we'll get sued.
I get it.
By you.
I know nothing.
Carrie leaves and sues us because we put her song on a podcast.
I know nothing.
And so, I like Adam Craig a lot.
Yeah.
I didn't know. So what's the plan with Adam?
We just released this new song. So we released that. We released two at the same time, but this is the one that went to radio a few weeks ago.
Love that releasing two at the same time, too. I'm such a fan of put more out there. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to connect because you have 10,000 things coming in 10,000 directions. If you can get something that just somewhat kind of hits somebody, you won. And so the more music you put out there.
And labels are getting more open to it now. So it's becoming a little more of the norm than it was, you know, a year ago?
Yeah.
They were real receptive. We put this out in another song called Whatever You're Drinking To. He had a new producer on the stuff. So we're excited about it. Honestly, this guy's voice.
Yeah, it's really, really strong.
He's one of the best vocal performers, like, that I've ever heard. And definitely, you know, he's just a good human being, too. So you want him to win. So we're going to work hard.
My final question is, I was watching on Netflix. What's the Pablo Escobar show called, Mike?
Narcos.
I was watching Narcos, right?
Yes, I haven't watched it.
Okay, well, you don't need to, but they have these money machines where they put all the cash through it, and it counts it. How many of those do you have at your house? Because that'd be good.
You are evil.
No, I imagine that. Like, you walk over, and it's like, it's just...
That is terrible.
All right.
That's bad.
Listen, we'll end on that.
Thank you for having me.
No, are you kidding? This has been so fun for me. Like I said, I'm in shorts and slippers. And maybe like one out of 15 of these, I get to do that.
We're gonna go eat some chips and queso or something, right?
if you haven't heard of them, Luke Bryan, mm-hmm. check him out.
Please.
If you probably have Cole Swindell, maybe hadn't heard of him either. Mm-hmm. We just Adam Craig, John Langston,
CB30,
and CB30. Mm-hmm. What's that stand for, by the way?
It is the first initial of Christian, and then Brody, and then 30. They were both of their birthdays are on the 30th of a month. So, you know, it's hard to come up with a name for bands and groups, but that's what we landed on.
Even for me, I have the stupidest name ever. It's hard to come up with a name. Bobby Bone, the stupidest name ever. Okay, episode 185. Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you.
All right, see everybody next time.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. TECOVAS.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk Wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines. Plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines. All on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
Hey, everyone. This is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.